And welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Dr. TJ. With me, as always, is Aaron. How are you, Aaron?
Doing great.
I'm kind of excited about today's show. Today, we have had question after question after question for us to finally talk about this topic. And so here we are. We're gonna talk about it. It's controversial, and I love it. We're going to talk about adrenal fatigue. Now, it's controversial because some people say it doesn't exist. Other people say it does exist. And so that's what makes it even more fun and exciting. So I'm gonna start off by going after the naysayers, and not really going after them, just understanding their purpose and their point. So adrenal fatigue is a common term. It is a term that's used to describe a whole pile of things that are going on in the body. The people that are very much against it are like, well, it doesn't appear in scientific literature and it's blah, 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 blah. Okay. I you know what? I give that to you. You're exactly right. What's really going on here is adrenal fatigue is really a disruption of the HPA, or the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. That's 100% correct of what's going on. Adrenal fatigue just makes a lot more sense when talking to the general population. It's the same exact thing as there's really no such thing out there as leaky gut, but we sure use the word leaky gut and the term leaky gut. The technical term is intestinal dysbiosis. It just doesn't have the same ring that leaky gut does. So I just wanted to get that out there and you know, say, hey, you know what? I recognize that adrenal fatigue isn't a scientific necessarily term, but there are a lot of articles written on it. There is some misinformation out there. There's people that don't really understand physiologically what's going on. And so just understand that. Trust me, I understand what's going on with the HPA axis and how it's HPA axis dysregulation that's really the root of what most people consider adrenal fatigue. So I just wanted to clear that air before we dive into adrenal fatigue, because I like the term adrenal fatigue. It's just easier to say, and people seem to have a basic understanding of what that is. So we're going to talk a little bit today about the adrenal glands. We're going to talk about the anatomy of them, what they do, what they make. And then we're going to talk about adrenal fatigue itself, how it has such drastic effect and dramatic effect on the human body. I mean, this is far reaching. Our adrenal glands make some hormones, and these things control a lot of different things in the body. So if you've got issues here, you're going to have issues throughout your entire body. So, again, this is something that I know that a lot of people have heard of, because we have a lot of people that come to the clinic and, you know, one of the first things they say is, my adrenals are shot. I'm just wiped out. I can't really go. You know, have you ever heard of adrenal fatigue? That's a question that I get asked a lot. And my answer is, okay, yes, I understand. I'm very familiar with what it is. Can you explain to me what you have going on? Because what's important is the symptoms that a patient is experiencing, not so much whether or not I understand what the general rule of adrenal fatigue is.
Right. And I think for, you know, you mentioned so many people have heard of this, and a lot of people think, okay, this could be an issue. But I think because it isn't necessarily recognized by mainstream medicine, just kind of starting to gain traction there, that a lot of people haven't heard of it and are experiencing all of these symptoms, and they have no idea why any of them are happening. Really, or they're diagnosed with something else completely.
Yeah, that's exactly true. But also people are coming in asking the question about adrenal fatigue, so they're at least looking, because they'll see things like, you know, maybe they're just exhausted and they see chronic fatigue. Well, chronic fatigue and adrenal fatigue kind of they run in the same circles.
Right.
And so they'll come across this terminology of adrenal fatigue accidentally. It's not like they're going out there actively searching. Hey,
right,
could my adrenals be wiped out?
Well, and I think also, I mean, we've done articles on this, we've done social media posts on adrenal fatigue, and we've gotten such a response from people saying, I didn't know this existed, but this totally describes me.
Right.
Which is kind of what, you know, we see in the clinic. There are so many people who are suffering from this. It just happens with the kind of lifestyle that most of us lead.
Right, right. So, you know, our whole thing was, we've finally got enough interest. I mean, like I said at the beginning, it is controversial, so we stayed away from it for a while. But now I'm just like, you know what? I don't care. Let's just throw it out there and give people the information that they're desperately looking for. So, you know, it's my opinion that most everyone is going to have adrenal fatigue or something similar to it, whether it's, you know, full on adrenal fatigue or varying stages of adrenal fatigue at some point in their life. Because one of the biggest things that drives adrenal fatigue, and we're going to talk a lot more about this later on, is massive amounts of stress. And the two of the big stressors that I'm referring to that really wipe people out is loss of a loved one and moving. Those are two massive, massive ones that everyone has to go through at some point. And if you haven't moved in the last 30 years, my guess is you've lost a loved one. So that's just the way it is. So.
Right, but it doesn't necessarily have to be even something really big.
No, I mean, it could be daily traffic.
Right, we all experience stress in different ways. And so there's, you know, no judgment here. That could be something that is not, you know, necessarily seen as a huge stress, but it can, you know, take enough of a toll on your system that you end up with adrenal fatigue.
Right. So one of the big things, you know, the adrenals, like I said, are they make these hormones that affect so many different things in the body that when we have disruptions here, the symptoms can mimic so many different disorders that it's sometimes very difficult to recognize and identify what's really truly going on. So a lot of places, if you read about adrenal fatigue, a lot of very similar things come out as far as symptoms that go along with adrenal fatigue. Some of the basic ones are just extreme fatigue, just completely wiped out, having brain fog, gaining weight, becoming insulin resistant. That's another one. That's like a pre-diabetes type situation. And there are others that we'll get to. But, you know, a lot of people have come in looking or seeking answers because they're just tired. And just the mere fact that you're fatigued and worn out, tired, exhausted, is not necessarily an indicator that you actually have adrenal fatigue. You know, the tests for adrenal fatigue are not the, what's the word I'm looking for? They're not the most straightforward test that you can identify. It's not just like, oh, we draw some blood or we check some saliva or we collect some urine and there's our answer, all pretty and packaged and it's lovely and it's flashing red lights and saying adrenal fatigue.
If you're above this number, then you have adrenal fatigue, or below this number, you know, and
right.
If, you know, you don't, then you're fine.
That's not how it works at all.
But that is the same thing with so many of the topics that we cover on the show, is
right.
That, you know, there it's not that clear cut, and therefore mainstream medicine is having a harder time dealing with it because it's not really clear. You
right.
Kind of have to, you know, do some digging, take some more time to figure it out, and that's where we come in.
Right.
And that's how people end up in the clinic.
That's exactly right. And that's where one of the places where, you know, naysayers to adrenal fatigue step in. They're like, well, the testing is terrible. I completely agree
right.
That the testing is suboptimal unless you completely and properly educate your patients on how these tests have to be done. I mean, some of these things we collect, one of the tests is a salivary cortisol. And I know anybody out there that's looking for answers to adrenal fatigue, you've read something somewhere along the line about cortisol levels in saliva. And cortisol is one of our stress hormones. It's our major stress hormone. And so the directions on a lot of these aren't very clear. This stuff has to be collected immediately upon waking up. You can't wait an hour or 2 hours later. You have to collect this stuff immediately. And stressing the importance to this to patients is one of the key pieces of this puzzle. Now, you can't just guess everything off of a saliva cortisol either. That doesn't give you the right answers.
I think
either.
That's another big problem, because there are a lot of, you know, alternative health practitioners who are just doing the saliva test.
Right.
And then
and just doing cortisol.
Right.
They're not even looking at the other hormones. They're
right.
Just doing saliva cortisol.
Yes. And we see that a lot. And that isn't enough. That, I mean, that tells us they don't know enough.
It tells me that your cortisol's out of whack.
Right.
That doesn't tell me anything about you.
Right. Yeah, it's not enough to diagnose adrenal fatigue. It's just not.
Right. That's exactly true. And so then when explaining that to our patients and saying, look, you know, I understand where the association jumped from, you know, your cortisol is off, so therefore you have adrenal fatigue. I get that there's that connection there, because there's a lot of literature and a lot of misinformation out there and people taking bigger steps than what they should. And so this is why I have to then explain this is the next step. This is the procedure in which how we actually identify what's going on, because just guessing off of a saliva test doesn't really tell anything, because most saliva tests check free cortisol levels. They don't necessarily test total cortisol levels, and that's a huge difference.
Right. It is important, though, right? I mean,
it's
saliva
important.
Tests do tell you.
Yeah.
But it
depends on the saliva test. Not
right.
All tests are created equal, and we got to get people to understand that, too. Not every single saliva test is the same across the board. Right. There's different ways to test different things, and if you're not using the right test, you're getting the wrong information.
Right.
So that's one of the big things that, you know, I like to point out there. You know, when we have high levels of cortisol in our saliva, that's a big red flag to us. That's a big red flag to me, because when you have high levels of cortisol causes your immune system to decrease, because it's stress, and all of us know that our immune system goes down when we're under massive stress. It causes our blood pressure to go up, causes our heart rate to go up. It messes with growth and development in children. I mean, there's just a lot of different things that go on with cortisol. So I get where they're trying to, you know, take a step and really start working with someone and say, hey, look, you know, your cortisol's off from where it's supposed to be. It's out of range. And so we need to address that. Well, that may not necessarily be the first course of action, the first step that needs to be taken. We may need to want to identify. I didn't say that right at all.
No, but I was going to let it go.
We need to identify the problems in their entirety and really get a good look at the person as a whole to make any judgment calls on what's actually going on. So most of the time people need more testing than what they come in with, even if they've been tested in the past, just to identify it properly. So that was a mouthful to get out there. And Liz is laughing at me. So
I got through it.
So we got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this stuff. And we're really going to get into what actually adrenal fatigue is. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back. So if you're just tuning in today, we're on Wellness 101. We're talking about adrenal fatigue. Very exciting topic. I love this topic because it encompasses so many different things that can go on in a person.
Right, and so many people are suffering from it.
Exactly. I mean, I'm pretty sure I suffered from it for a while.
I guess,
forever in school, so
yeah.
I obviously had some sort of adrenal fatigue.
Right. Well, and I think, yeah, it's a good point. I mean, so many people, maybe not at the same time, but at some point in their life, most people are going to have a period of time where they have an issue with this.
Right.
It's that common.
Exactly. So adrenal fatigue is in the medical world, it's a relatively new term. It's a new phenomenon. It was basically thrown out there by this guy named James Wilson, who's a naturopath and a PhD. And I mean, he's just a really, really smart guy. In about 98-ish. So it's relatively new in the medical world. And he basically made this assumption that if you overstimulated adrenal glands due to like chronic stress and things like that, that over time, this could lead to an inconsistent level of cortisol, which, as we've talked about on this show before, cortisol is a stress hormone. So we could get these inconsistent levels of cortisol in the bloodstream, and sometimes for, you know, far more than normal, and other times way too little. So we may have way too much, we may have way too little. And so when we add to this cortisol, then the people with adrenal fatigue, he was identifying that they often didn't have enough of DHEA, which is another hormone that the adrenal glands make. It's basically a parent hormone for how we make some other hormones in our body, specifically, you know, testosterone and estrogens and things like that. So That was his, like, assumption. And it's actually a pretty good assumption. If you really get down to it, it's pretty amazing when people make these relatively drastic leaps and come up with a term that really encompasses a lot of individuals and a lot of things that people suffer from.
Right. And once he makes the connection, then it's like, oh, it all makes sense. Like, of course, you know, I mean, that's kind of what we're seeing, but yeah. No one had really made the correlation before.
Well, yeah, exactly. What he basically did, and this is what's so brilliant about this guy, he literally defined the middle ground. So in modern medicine, they basically said, you know, you have perfectly functioning adrenal glands, or you had disease of the adrenal glands, and there was absolutely no possible way to have any kind of middle ground. That it was either perfect or it was broken. No choice.
Right. And the problem with, you know, you saying that it's broken is you don't realize it's broken until it's really broken.
Right.
I mean, what medical, you know, the medical field defines as, you know, broken adrenals is you are really, really in bad shape at that point.
Right. And basically, in the medical world, you either have Cushing's, and I'm not going to get into these, you either have Cushing's disease or you have Addison's disease. And, I mean, we could spend a whole show on each of these, but that's like medically broken adrenal glands. And, you know, basically endocrine failure versus properly functioning adrenal glands.
Right.
And he's basically saying we have this thing called adrenal fatigue, or your adrenals just aren't working as well as they could be.
Right. And that's so much of what we do in our clinic. I mean, of course, we see a ton of people who are way, you know, who have really serious problems and have, you know, and are, you know, without answers and have been without answers for a long time. But what we're really trying to focus on, you know, with most of the population is the fact that there is this whole middle ground in general in health where you don't have optimal health and you don't have to wait until you're extremely sick and on your deathbed
right.
and suffering from things that now can't be reversed.
Right.
I mean, so, and, you know, adrenal fatigue is a great example of that, of, hey, let's catch it before you're on your deathbed so we can actually fix it.
Huh. Fix it before you're dead. Imagine that.
It's an amazing concept.
It's a crazy concept. You're just blasphemy, what you're saying. It can't be.
Yeah.
Can't
and
be
we're going to get into, there are actually ways that you can do this. If, you know, I mean, if you think you can be suffering from this, that you don't have, you know, that you can try on your own. And that's
right.
Really, you know, what we're always trying to help with on the show is to give you things that, you know, steps that you yourself can take to try to improve these things.
That's right. So, Dr. Wilson, back to this guy, this brilliant fellow. I want to get him on the show. I want to get him on the show one of these days and have him talk about this, because he basically outlines a progression of, you know, someone who's suffering from adrenal fatigue and what a typical day in the life of someone with that. So listen closely to this progression of events throughout a day and see if this describes you. If this describes you, I can tell you right now, you need help, and you need help now. Go find someone to help you. So here's the progression. So you wake up in the morning and you're unable to get going unless you have a massive amount of caffeine, couple pots, whatever it is. If you've got to have caffeine to start your day, we've got an issue. So you finally get your caffeine, and this gives you a boost to get you through most of the early part of the day. And then you start to crash. You have lunch and then crash around 2. How many of you out there are crashing around 2? I know a lot of people do, because that's when they make another coffee pot run and try to load up again. And then they feel better around 6 o'clock, about the time they get home, and then eat dinner, and then things start to fade. And by 9 o'clock at night, you're, you know, crashing again. And then you finally get yourself up off the couch. You dilly dally around a little bit. Next thing you know, it's 11 o'clock and you're amped up, ready to rock, and you're wide awake again.
Right. And that's, I think, a key, is this ramp up at 11 that people, because I think a lot of the, you know, the first parts that you talked about, you know, at the beginning you're having trouble. Well, people are like, I'm, you know, I have to get up early, and then I go to work, and maybe your job isn't exactly what you wanted, or you're like, well, I'm, you know, it's fine, but it's work, and so of course I feel kind of tired. And then you eat lunch, and then you're back at work again, and you think, well, of course I'm tired. 6 o'clock, you think, well, that makes sense that I'm feeling better, because I'm off work now, and I'm doing, you know, I've got these things to do at home. And then you, you know, crash around 9. That 11 o'clock picking back up around that time, that's key, I think. Right. I think that is really something to pay attention to. If you feel like it gets late at night and it's hard for you to fall asleep because, you know, either your mind is racing or you feel like, well, I have some energy now, so now I should use the energy to get some stuff done. Right.
And remember, these times are relative.
Right, okay? Exactly.
These times can be shifted. So, you know, this is someone whose normal day starts at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. But if your day starts at 5 and then you're ramped up at 9 at night, we've got an issue. It's basically just turning things back a little bit. If you don't wake up until, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning and you start waking up at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, because that's normal bedtime, well, then that's the problem.
Right.
This is movable on the clock dial.
And a lot of people look at that as, well, I'm just, you know, I'm a night owl, or I'm more of a night person. Like, that isn't how the body was made to function.
Correct.
So if that's how you are doing it, and I get that, you know, you're maybe working with that to cope through, you know, to be able to get through life because you've got to have time to get things done. Just know that that is not how the body should be functioning, and there is a better way to get you back on track.
There is a much better way. And, you know, we all know about sleep and how important sleep is. That's a big piece of this. I mean, we need 6 to 8 hours, and we're going to talk in a little bit about quality versus quantity, but you still got to have the sleep.
Right. And I know how frustrating that is to those of you, because I suffered from adrenal fatigue. I mean, I know what this is like, and I know how frustrating it is when people are like, well, you need to sleep, and you're thinking, I get that. I mean, but, you know, like 11 o'clock.
Thanks, Captain Obvious.
Right, 11 o'clock to like 3 a.m. is when I get everything done for the day because I wasn't able to do it the rest of the time.
Yes.
So I totally get it.
Yes, I think we need to have a Captain Obvious segment on the show. I just invoked Captain Obvious out of nowhere. For those of you who are maybe too young to know who Captain Obvious was, well, back up a few years because it was a common thing.
There's a commercial on TV that has Captain Obvious now.
There is?
Really?
Yes. Yeah, it's for hotels or something.
I love Captain Obvious.
He's like, this roof is leaking. And they're like, thanks, Captain Obvious. So Captain Obvious is still around.
Perfect. So just watch your local hotel commercials or whatever that is for that. So one of the questions that, you know, I talked about this at the very beginning, you know, this whole group of people and these people that say that adrenal fatigue isn't real. Okay. So let's talk about it, whether or not it's real or not. So there's a lot of issues in just the concept of, does this exist? Is this really true? Yes, the likelihood is it exists. Now, the research out there, backing up just a second. So the way Dr. Wilson presents this, it's common sense. It makes perfect sense to anyone who has half a brain cell that there has to be some sort of middle ground between optimally functioning and dead. So there's got to be something in there. So we need to figure out, and he just happened to name it adrenal fatigue. So the question that comes then is, what's up with the research out there that says that it's not real? I'll tell you, as a PhD, so many things in research can be really, really messed up, and people will hang their hat on the results when the study design is horrible. And so for those of you out there who may not understand this, there are different ways to look at the statistical analysis of a study. And, you know, you can make a lot of things say a lot of different things. Numbers don't lie, but the way you put the numbers together can lie. That's the key. You know, the statisticians will say, well, the numbers are right. Well, I completely agree that the numbers are right, but when you run them this way versus that way, you get two different answers. And so that makes a huge difference when we determine, you know, the design of this study and the way this thing was put together. Of course the answers are going to come out. You know, incorrect. If you're only looking at this one little piece, but yet there's a whole human body to deal with, that's not how the human body interacts. You can't look at one little piece of the puzzle and expect, you know, all of these things that are going on to give you the answer of this one specific thing. It just, the human body doesn't work like that. It just doesn't.
Right.
So, all right, we've got to take another break. We may talk a little bit more about that. And then we need to talk a little bit about what the adrenal glands are, the components of them, get into some anatomy and really dive into that. You're listening to Wellness 101. Welcome back. So today we're talking about adrenal fatigue. It's been a very exciting show. I like the topic of adrenal fatigue. It's fun and exciting. And before we left for break, we were talking about how some of the research out there that says that adrenal fatigue doesn't exist is using, you know, not necessarily the greatest ways to look at the statistical analysis. And I talked about how the numbers don't lie, but sometimes how we use them does. And so the study design can be off. And we were talking at the break, and a perfect example came up. So it's one of those things where, you know, 3 + 1 = 4, but 3 × 1 = 3. It's the exact same numbers, little different formula, gives you completely different results. And I think that's a great example for why some of these things don't work.
Right. And it's the
and that was all Liz.
It was.
That was lovely
Liz.
Producer Liz.
And I don't even math half the time, so everybody is welcome.
Yes. But that's, I think, great. That makes it really easy to understand.
Yes.
And I think, you know, that's, it's so often we see that happen where, you know, people will point to studies and, you know, I know, you know, you have often said, Dr. TJ, that like, okay, well, I've read that study, and that's not exactly what that is what their conclusion is, but that's not really necessarily completely true.
There are studies out there where the authors make conclusions that the data don't even come close to supporting.
Right. And
they will jump to these drastic conclusions. I'm like, what in the world is going on here?
Right. And that's why, you know, I mean, most of us don't want to read these studies, and that's why you should be tuning into this radio show. He does.
That's exactly right. I'm a nerd like that. So basically, you know, there's a lot of information out there. There's a lot of misinformation. There's stuff out there that says that it doesn't exist. There's a lot of, you know, proof in the pudding,
right,
clinically, that says that it does.
And it's kind of, I mean, it reminds me of the whole thing we've talked about before with leaky gut, where it's, you know, I mean, it's all of these different symptoms. And so, and it's not that clear cut where this is the leaky gut test and either you're positive or you're negative. And so it took a long time for the medical community to kind of start getting on board. And it's the same thing with adrenal fatigue, where we're saying, okay, well, we've had people coming into the clinic with this and we've been able to fix them for a long time. So
Right. We're
glad that you're finally getting on board, but it's not
we've got the lab values that prove it.
Exactly.
That they were in a big old mess and now they're better.
Right.
So I don't know what to say about that. Other than, you know, a lot of times proof is in the pudding.
Right.
And when you've got lots of proof, guess what? You make a big old batch of pudding.
Right. And what we... Nice. And I mean, what we care about is that, you know, we have so many patients who are happy and are then sending other people because they're like, you know, whether this is true or not, lab values are different and I feel a million times better. And
Right. That's
what really matters.
Right. I mean, a lot of times out there, you know, the naysayers are like, oh, well, this doesn't exist. And these people are just trying to take advantage of stuff. Nobody's trying to take advantage of anything. I'm just pointing out, look, these are lab values that are out of whack. These are things that we can do that are easily done to bring those lab values back into range. As that happens, my guess is you're going to feel better. And 9 times out of 10, they feel almost better immediately.
Right.
I mean, it's not like this takes a long time. Now, I say that, and it depends on how far out of whack you are. I mean, you know, this can take a couple years, but for people that have been completely exhausted for the last 20 years of their life, 2 years to get back to how they felt, you know, 2 decades ago,
right,
it's a massive change.
And I know I've said this on the show before. You know, I was really in bad shape when I started getting help, and you just start feeling a little better, you get that momentum behind you.
Right.
I mean, so that makes such a huge difference. I mean, was I better immediately? No, I had been sick for a long time. I had major issues to work on, but gosh, you just, you know, seeing any improvement after you've gone so long going downhill is huge. And I mean, that's what keeps you motivated to keep going.
Right.
So, and you're going to be 2 years older in 2 years anyway. Why not be 2 years older and feel better?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Time is going to go regardless.
Hey, time keeps on ticking.
Yep.
That's a song. I heard it somewhere along the line. All right. So we've spent a long time before we actually got to the adrenal glands. Let's actually talk about the adrenal glands. So what are your adrenal glands? Your adrenal glands are these two little glands that are about the size of your thumb. They're about the size of your thumb. They sit right on top of your kidneys, and they're part of what is called the endocrine system. Now, another word for the adrenal glands is suprarenal, just meaning on top of your kidneys glands. So the main job of these things is to produce hormone. hormones, plural. They make around 50-ish. I'm not going to sit here and list them all because we have some main ones that are constantly talked about. And that's what we'll dive into in a bit. But I want to talk about the anatomy of these things. So, you know, this show is called Wellness 101 for a reason because we set it up like a course. We want people to actually learn information. So here are some, here's your meat and potatoes if you're taking notes out there. Of things to write down. So there are major parts of the adrenal gland. We have the adrenal cortex and the adrenal medulla. Okay, so the adrenal cortex has three layers to it. It has the zona glomerulosa, it has the zona fasciculata, and it has the zona reticularis. Okay, so the glomerulosa zone. So this zone is the outermost layer of the cortex. It makes mineral corticoids. And the main mineral corticoid that we're talking about here is aldosterone. And what aldosterone does is it helps our body regulate blood pressure. It regulates sodium and potassium inflow and outflow and concentrations and things like that. And this all kind of takes place in the kidney. And for any of you out there who have you know, listened to me talk, especially on cardiovascular system, because I teach a lot of cardiovascular health to other docs, we hammer on how kidneys regulate blood pressure. It's kidneys and lungs. It's not our heart. Our heart has absolutely nothing to do with blood pressure. So mineral corticoids are basically, their main job is to regulate mineral balance. So that's the outermost layer of the adrenal cortex.
And this makes sense. You saying that it regulates sodium and potassium. Isn't like the sodium potassium ratio tied to how well your adrenals are working?
Yeah, and it also has to do with blood pressure, so it's actually very interesting.
I'm patting myself on the back for that.
She's got the smile on her face that she's patting herself on the back.
Well, this whole section, I just want to say, I was not that excited to have in here, but Dr. TJ really wanted to talk about it.
Yes,
so
it's important. People want to know this information.
Okay, go ahead.
Or maybe I just want to give it to them. I don't know. So the second layer is the middle layer. It's the zona fasciculata. It's the largest of the three layers. This actually makes up about 80% of the adrenal cortex. Now, this layer is the one that makes our glucocorticoids. And our major glucocorticoid here is cortisol. Okay, so this is important because cortisol helps regulate our cardiovascular system, our entire metabolism, our whole metabolic system, our immune system, and it has to do with homeostatic function. Is that homeostasis is like balancing a teeter-totter. If you think of the human body as a teeter-totter, homeostasis means that the teeter-totter is perfectly balanced. We have the exact same amount of weight on either end. So these things are important, and cortisol and glucocorticoids are important because glucocorticoids suppress the immune system. So this is why things like hydrocortisone cream works to help stop itchy skin. And itchy skin is an immune reaction. We put the cortisone cream on there, the immune reaction is suppressed, the itchy skin stops. Did it actually fix what's causing the itchy skin? No. But did it suppress the immune system to make you not want to claw your skin off? Yes. So that's one of the big things there. But the problem with cortisol is it causes our blood sugar to go up. It causes us to be insulin resistant. It causes us to bruise very easily. So when someone comes in, they're super stressed and they bruise easily, guess what? Guess what I'm thinking? Yep, you got it. I'm thinking, we got some cortisol problems. We have some adrenal issues going on. It's a very easy thing, and you know we start to draw some lines together.
Right, and that's just one of the reasons why those of you who have come to the clinic, you know why so many questions are asked.
Yeah.
Because there are these things that you would never think go together, and for some reason, you know, they do, and TJ knows about them.
And for some of you who have sat in there and we've talked for an hour and a half, and then I throw out the question of, do you think you have anything going on that we've missed so far that's maybe completely unrelated, and you come up with something that completely changes the entire complexion of the entire visit, and we go a completely different direction to deal with the problem. That happens too. It's because I draw these lines. Another big one is osteoporosis. That's another big one that, you know, cortisol can create. So high levels of cortisol can actually drive osteoporosis. So glucocorticoids, basically in a nutshell, they increase levels of glucose in our body. And the last layer of the adrenal cortex is the reticularis, the zona reticularis. And this layer produces our androgen hormones. It produces DHEA and androstenedione. This androstenedione is basically the precursor to testosterone. And most all of us know that that's what these things do, with testosterone. It makes us, you know, bigger, faster, stronger, helps us to recover better. And then we've got to take another break. When we come back from the break, I'm going to talk about the adrenal medulla, which is the center of the adrenal glands. And we're going to continue on with kind of what these things do in the body. You're listening to Wellness 101. And welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you've missed a great show so far.
Yeah, but don't worry, because we're probably going to have like three more.
Yes.
At the rate we're going.
We have so much information. I got so excited when we decided that this was the topic. I'm just like, okay, we've got to talk about all of these things. So here you go, ladies and gentlemen. You asked for it. Sometimes you got to be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. So before we left, we were talking about the adrenal cortex. We talked about the three zones, the glomerulosa, the fasciculata, and the reticularis. Glomerulosa makes mineral corticoids, which regulate mineral balance. The fasciculata makes glucocorticoids, which help to regulate the cardiovascular system, metabolic system, immune system, and homeostatic function in the body. And then we talked about the reticularis, which makes our androgen hormones, DHEA and androstenedione, which are basically precursors to testosterone. And I said that when we come back, we were going to talk about the adrenal medulla. So the adrenal medulla is the center of the adrenal glands. And this area makes these things called catecholamines. And that's a fancy word, but y'all already know what these things are. This is where we make adrenaline and noradrenaline, or epinephrine and norepinephrine. They're the exact same things. Adrenaline, epinephrine are the same thing. Noradrenaline, norepinephrine are the same things. And these things are made from the amino acid tyrosine. That's one of my favorite amino acids. Well, Aaron just laughed at me. Tyrosine's so important in the body, Aaron.
It's your favorite.
It is. It's one of my favorites.
There's a lot of amino acids. Yeah. My favorite.
Now I'm just getting made fun of. I just want to be quiet. I'm just in the corner.
I think it's awesome.
Yes.
I do.
Yes.
Because I nerd out about stuff, and like I have that same thing where people are like, really?
That's your favorite.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So I like tyrosine, but technically that comes from phenylalanine, because phenylalanine gets converted into tyrosine. But once we get to tyrosine, that's when we get into L-DOPA, and then we get into dopamine, and then into noradrenaline or norepinephrine, and then we finally get to adrenaline or epinephrine. So that's the process in which we make all of these things. And so it's really kind of cool, in my opinion, of how our body gets through all these processes, because, you know, there are genetic things that take place, and we don't even have notes on this. Sorry, I'm going off the rails a little bit. There are genetic components to our body's ability to break down some of these catecholamines. We have this genetic SNP that people can have called COMT, or catechol-O-methyltransferase. You can have a genetic SNP here, because we've talked about MTHFR on this show, haven't we, Erin?
I'm guessing.
Yeah, I think we did. So that's a place where we can have a genetic SNP. It's an enzyme that can have a SNP, and we can also have a SNP with COMT. And so that alters how we can get rid of and deal with these catecholamines. So those are extremely important, and we all are fairly familiar with what adrenaline does for us. It gives us our fight or flight response, allows us to run from danger or fight for our lives, whatever is necessary at that particular moment. So that's the layers and areas of the adrenal glands. Do you feel way smarter, Erin?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
now she has this glazed over look on her face. Okay, so back to the adrenal glands then. So our adrenal glands make hormones, and our hormones basically affect every single function in the body, every organ, every tissue, and it's either affecting these things directly or indirectly.
Right, and that's why adrenal glands are so important. That's why adrenal fatigue has such a, you know, can cause so many problems.
It's a very far-reaching thing. It can reach out and affect most anything that goes on in our body. But these hormones, they not only do they have to be in a very delicate balance, but they can react to each other. And if they're not in balance, we have issues. And the body tries to work overtime to fix these issues. And our adrenal glands, and I talked about this at the very beginning of the show, they're a part of the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal axis, or the HPA axis. So having a complete understanding of that piece of the puzzle is extremely important when we start dealing with adrenal fatigue and adrenal issues, because, you know, we're talking about a problem with the last piece of the puzzle, but there could be a problem at the hypothalamus, there could be a problem at the pituitary, and there could be a problem at the adrenals. So you've got to understand, you know, if you need help, find somebody that can help you that understands how all this, you know, meshes together and weaves together and can explain it to you in a way that helps you understand too. So normally our adrenal glands release cortisol on this, what they call a diurnal rhythm, which is we have cortisol, you know, boost throughout the day. We release a hormone, then we don't release a hormone, then release a hormone, we don't release a hormone. But most of us with cortisol, when we're producing it properly, we make more in the morning, and then it just kind of tapers off throughout the day. And as it tapers off, that allows us to fall asleep, get tired, not necessarily in that order. And, you know, then we sleep, replenish everything, we produce this stuff, and then we have our high level of cortisol in the morning when we wake up the next morning. But that rhythm doesn't always happen when we start piling stress on the body. You start piling stress on the body, and this rhythm, this diurnal rhythm, gets out of whack. And when this thing gets out of whack, that's how we end up with this being wide awake at 11 o'clock at night, because we have cortisol that's being produced when it's not supposed to be made. And that's how we end up with some pretty serious trouble long term, because our body is not meant to sustain this sort of stuff. And so our adrenal glands are huge in this stress response, or this fight or flight response. So where was I at here on that? Oh, yeah. Sometimes I lose my train of thought because I get thinking ahead. So with this whole stress response, when your brain registers this threat, no matter what it is, if it's emotional, if it's mental, if it's physical, it doesn't matter. It will register that threat. The adrenal medulla, the center part of your adrenals, will release cortisol and adrenaline. Well, the adrenal medulla doesn't release cortisol. That's a glucocorticoid, but it'll release adrenaline. And all of these things in conjunction will help you react to that threat, whether you're going to run from it or you're going to fight for it. That's what happens. And when we sustain that sort of process in the body long term, we're going to run out of the ability to do that. It's like driving your car with, you know, across Kansas, and you filled up in, you know, St. Louis, and you get to Kansas, and you just decide that you're going to go 150 mile an hour the whole way across Kansas. You're not going to make it. Sorry, it's just not going to happen. For anyone living in Kansas, Kansas is a long state. It takes forever to drive across. And that's just, we can't do that with our body. We can't expect our body to keep up that pace. So remember, our takeaways for today, because obviously we have enough information to last us about 50 shows here. So for the next year, tune in. We're going to have the adrenal fatigue.
We'll tell you why you feel sleepy during the day. Yeah.
Yes. It may happen at about 4 o'clock in the afternoons in the Midwest here. So your adrenal glands help balance the hormones. We make things, they make things like glucocorticoids that helps our body deal with blood sugar. It causes us to raise blood sugar. It helps us with energy. It helps us with metabolizing food. It can help our body relieve stress, and it helps deal with the immune response. It can help put the fire out, because sometimes we don't want our immune response to be too active. That can be a problem, too. We have mineral corticoids. Those things maintain healthy blood pressure and keep our minerals in balance. We have our sex hormones, estrogen, testosterone. Those are extremely important. And then, like I said, we talked here about epinephrine and norepinephrine. These things have a lot to do with, you know, fight or flight and how our heart health and making sure that our body is getting, you know, nutrients in the right spot, getting blood to the right area, converting, you know, stored blood sugar, glycogen, into glucose, in our liver. And that in a nutshell is an anatomy of the adrenal glands. So we have an entire show next week on the causes of adrenal fatigue and what can be done, to help that, provided that we have enough time to actually get to what can help adrenal fatigue. So
yeah, we will get there eventually.
Eventually.
Next show, or next show three.
Yeah, it's possible.
But we will give you steps that you can take.
Yeah. So that's about all the time we've got for today. If you would like more information, theinstituteofnaturalhealth.com. You can call us 314-293-8123. Follow us on all of our social media outlets. For Aaron and Wellness 101, I'm Dr. TJ. Thanks for listening.